Chapter 5. 913959. M41. The Tunnel System, Imperial Command Center, Olympax Mountains, Pythos. Zula didn't need to know the route Brand was taking, as the trail of bodies left at her passing told her which direction to head. A map of mortality pointing ever deeper into Olympax. Just a strike had found his way through the warren of tunnels to the peak of the Delver stronghold. Brand was heading in the opposite direction. In pursuit of what goal, Zula could only speculate, but she had a pretty good idea what it was the traitor sought. The seals. One had been opened for certain, but how many others still remained closed? How many seals were there to begin with? Zula came to the sudden realization that for all her inquisitorial training, for all her years of experience in service to the Ordo, and as a thief before that, she was utterly helpless in all this, a mere bystander to the events that were unfolding around her on Pythos. That would all change if Lyle had succeeded in getting his second message out. Lyle. Another mark on Brand's tally sheet as far as Zula was concerned. "More bodies, sir," one of the Catachans said, illuminating the roughly hewn steps with a loom strip taped to the side of his las rifle. Once KC had shown Zula where Brand had crash-landed in the Valkyrie, and between her and Thorn managed to piece things together, the Major had assigned her a squad to pursue the traitor. Zula counted three corpses in all, each one lying face down with multiple stab wounds to their backs and shoulders. Their weapons were still slung over their shoulders, and no scorch marks blackened the coarse stone walls. With Vox communication impossible in the confines of the base's tunnels, Thorn had been unable to broadcast a warning that there were traitors in their midst. Without any prompting, the two lead Catachans carefully searched the corpses for signs of traps. The squad hadn't exercised such caution with the first body they'd come across, and of the 10 Catachans who'd begun the descent with Zula, 7 now remained. Each time they had to stop, valuable time was wasted, and Brand gained a bigger advantage over them.
"Clear!"
one of them called after a couple of minutes. The brawny Catachan retrieved the blades from his dead comrade's belts and took his place at the rear of the formation, as Zula and the rest of his squad filed down the steeply descending tunnel. Further ahead, down the maze of stone corridors and out of earshot of their pursuers, Brand and her team had reached their goal, though at first glance it was not immediately apparent. She had halted in a wide vestibule in the tunnel and was facing a sheer rock surface that terminated so high above her that it seemed to go on forever. It appeared to be of the same material as the rest of the mountain, but its crafting marks were cleaner, more refined than those of the tunnel and the rest of the Delver stronghold. She placed her palm against the smooth rock. It was warm to the touch.
The Cabal's scrying was accurate. "This is the place. I can feel the power coursing through the very rock itself."
She pulled her hand away from the heated rock and drew her knife.
"Ajanipal, come here. It is time to fulfil your service," she said.
One of the fake Catachans eagerly approached her. He too had removed his bandana, but instead of revealing a smooth scalp, two small protrusions sat just above his forehead, the earliest blossoming of vestigial horns. He looked as if he was about to deliver a speech, profound last words before expending his duty, but before he could say anything, Brand's blade, already slick with the blood of others, ran him through. With both hands, she tore upwards, parting the flesh to open up his insides. Ajanipal moaned in pleasure pain and placed his hands inside his wound. Moments later, he removed them, covered in dripping crimson gore, and began to daub haphazardly upon the wall of the vestibule. His bloody smears formed crude sigils, blasphemous icons that were painful to look upon, and when he had made three identical marks in a triangular pattern, he took his finger and drew a bloody trail to link them. The instant the final sigil was connected to the others in blood, the mountain itself started to shake, and the already warm surface of the wall radiated an intense heat. Brand and the other cultists retreated back to the far wall of the cavern, but Ajanipal, struck dumb by loss of blood and awe at what he had set in motion, remained still, his flesh blackening as it fried. The tremors within the mountain grew more intense, and a deafening noise, like two tectonic plates scraping against each other, forced the four lucid figures in the chamber to clamp their hands tightly to the side of their heads in defence of their eardrums. With one last violent shudder, a wide crack, the girth of two men, formed in the base of the smooth wall and raced up the inside of the mountain, chasing itself up towards the peak. As quickly as the tremors and the cacophony had begun, they ceased.
"Lord Corpulax gives you both his blessing and his thanks, Sir Janipol," Bran said, stepping over the smoking body of the cultist and into the crack.
913959, M41, Hangar Level, Imperial Command Center, Olympax Mountains, Pythos. Thorn was still cursing himself for allowing the traitor to get the better of him when parts of the hangar roof came showering down. The floor began to rock, and avoiding chunks of stone that were dropping from above, he sought sanctuary in the open hatch of a Valkyrie undergoing repairs. Others, too, had the same idea, and for the duration of the quake, Thorn was confined to the enclosed space with almost a score of sweating Catachans, unable to cover his mouth and nose as the noise from debris hitting the hull forced him to cover his ears. For what seemed like far longer, but was in reality only a matter of seconds, the Valkyrie swayed from side to side, battering its occupants against the walls and each other. As quickly as the tremors and the cacophony had begun, they ceased. Emerging from the grounded craft into a billow of rock dust, Thorn took stock of the situation. All of the Valkyries within sight had sustained damage, but apart from those who had suffered damage or malfunction prior to the quake, looked airworthy. Something told him they were going to need them soon.
"What the hell was that?"
asked a slab-muscled woman, rubbing her shoulder from where she'd taken an impact. "I don't know, but I'll wager any of you a year's rations it's something to do with that traitor Inquisitor," said Thorn, wiping rock dust from his eyes. "Come on, let's get this place cleaned up and start assessing the damage."
"Sir, over here, you need to see this,"
called a bearded officer from the lip of the hangar entrance. Thorn strode over to join him, unable to see what the sergeant was trying to point out until he was practically alongside the man, such was the volume of dust choking the hangar. Away in the distance, at the very limit of unaugmented human vision, the sky was full of tiny black dots, 100 at least by Thorn's reckoning.
"Is that Colonel Strike, sir?"
the sergeant asked. "I hope so," said Thorn, gesturing to another sergeant to bring him a set of magnoculars. "For all of our sakes, I damn well hope so." 913959, M41. The Tunnel System, Imperial Command Center, Olympax Mountains, Pythos. Feeling the first vibrations, Zula threw herself flat against the tunnel wall. Her home world was crisscrossed by multiple fault lines, and the practice drilled into her as a child returned instinctively. If there had been a table or desk to duck under, or a doorway to stand beneath, she would have used that as cover. But exposed as she was in the tunnel, pressing her back against the wall was the most protection she could afford herself. The Catachans followed Zula's lead, and they too spread out along the rock face. A couple were too slow, and in amongst the fist-sized chunks of stone that were pouring down, a weighty slab of rock crashed amongst them, pulverizing bone and meat, and pinning their corpses to the tunnel floor. The others could only watch on helplessly as the tremors intensified and the mountain threw more of itself down. As quickly as the tremors and the cacophony had begun, they ceased. With the noise of the rockfall still echoing along the tunnel, Zula knelt down to check the bodies of the two Catachans pressed beneath the slab, and after confirming what she already knew, retrieved their knives. Handing them over to one of the surviving Deathworlders, she began to pick her way through the carpet of debris to continue her pursuit of Brand. She hoped she was not too late. In her time as a servant of the Divinicus Lycae, and while posing as the apprentice to not just one, but two Inquisitors, Tryphena Brand had witnessed many things, both wondrous and abhorrent. As she stepped inside the vast subterranean cavern opened after untold millennia by dark ritual, She wasn't sure which category to mentally file this one under. A flickering blue glow bathed the entire area, rising in a column through the gloom. It illuminated the recesses of a vaulted ceiling high above and highlighted immense stalactites descending from the roof like giant fangs. The effect was spectacular, but it was the source of the light that both repulsed and enthralled her. Upon a raised dais in the centre of the cavern, a stasis field hummed and crackled gently, pulsing rhythmically in a strobe-like manner. Beneath the protective canopy of energy, 13 robed figures, emaciated to the point of skeletism, moved in grotesque slow motion, like a picked feed slowed down to a single frame every few seconds. The attire they wore was threadbare and rotted in places, exposing cadaverous frames bereft entirely of muscle or fat. Limp skin hung from their limbs, giving the impression that they wore a second set of robes beneath the top layer. Their mouths moved in a fashion that was painful to observe, taut skin slowly stretching and cracking as their jaws opened and closed over a lengthy cycle. Other than the almost imperceptible movements, the only other sign that the occupants of the chamber were still alive was the puffs of breath that condensed in the freezing air of the stasis cocoon. If they were aware of the newcomers to their home, they were showing no outward signs.
"Psykers," Brand spat. 13 bound psykers left to watch over the final seal. All that remains now is to slay them, and after 10,000 years, the damnation cache will be opened once more. Our masters will soon walk this realm again as lords of all."
Unprompted, one of her companions drew a crude auto-pistol and pointed it at the dais.
"Stop!"
yelled Brand, a moment too late. The cultist pulled the trigger, and the bullet sped inexorably towards the dome of blue energy. It hit the stasis field and bounced off, ricocheting crazily off the walls of the cavern, given new impetus by its deflection.
"The field doesn't just keep them alive, you fool! It protects them too! Killing them is going to take..."
She was interrupted by the changing sound of the rogue bullet. Instead of bouncing off the cavern walls, it had hit something metallic before dropping to the floor and rolling towards her feet from out of a benighted recess.
"What was that?"
she asked. Activating a loom strip, the shooter lit up the alcove. What they saw there gave them a moment's pause. Covered from helmet to boots in verdigris, moss and fungal mould, the form of a Terminator-armoured space marine stood sentinel in the alcove. Halberd in one hand, the helmeted figure was a near-perfect representation of the superhuman elite of the Imperium's armies, right down to the bolt pistol holstered at its hip and the numerous purity seals applied to its pauldrons and breastplate. A glint of silver reflected the light of the loom strip where the bullet had grazed a knee guard and removed the detritus of the ages. Even a representation of the mighty Adeptus Astartes was enough to instill awe, and it was several moments before anybody spoke.
"It's a statue," said the cultist, holding up the light. "How typical of the Emperor's curse to leave a mere statue to keep guard over..."
A creak emanated from the recess. As one, the cultist's guns came up, aimed at the monument.
"It moved! The statue just moved!"
the cultist said, shining the loom strip up and down to find the source of the noise. The statue remained immobile.
"Don't be ridiculous," Brand scoffed. "It was probably just a rat."
She lowered her weapon to emphasize her point, as did the other cultists.
"That was no rat. This thing..."
He never got to finish his sentence.
"I can assure you, traitor," said the statue, drawing and firing its bolt pistol in one swift movement, turning the cultist's head to a cloud of crimson mist. "I am far more than a mere statue," it added, before opening fire on the remaining cultists.
913959, M41, Hangar Level Imperial Command Center, Olympax Mountains, Pythos. The Valkyries were so close now that Thorne could make out the colour schemes and markings of individual craft. All of them were gunships that had set out from Olympax weeks earlier, and none of them were showing obvious signs of hostile intent. But neither had the traitor Inquisitor when she flew straight in and passed herself off as a Catachan captain. How did the old saying go? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Chief, we still can't raise the incoming Valkyries,
called a Vox operator from the back of the hangar.
The quake knocked out the comms tower. It'll be hours before it's operational again.
What do you think, Major? Is this another ploy by the enemy?
Asked the sergeant beside Thorne. The Major put the magnoculars back to his eyes. The full glare of Pythos's sun reflected back off the cockpit canopies, making it impossible to see who was piloting the craft. Would that make a difference anyway? The enemy had already tried to pass themselves off as soldiers of the 183rd, and the jungles and Delver strongholds were rife with dead Catachans from which to pilfer uniforms.
They're about to come into range of the anti-aircraft batteries, Chief. If we hit them now, we should be able to down most of them before they have a chance to return fire. Do you want me to give the order to fire?
The sergeant gestured for a runner to be ready to deliver the order to the flak gun crews. Thorne ran a hand across his bearded jaw, deep in contemplation.
We're going to lose our chance, the sergeant urged. You need to make the call now, Major.
913-959, M41, the Tunnel System, Imperial Command Center, Olympax Mountains, Pythos. The last sound Zula Degrees expected to hear as she picked her way through the rock-strewn tunnels of the depths of Mount Olympax was the report of a bolt pistol echoing up from below. When she raced through the vast crevice that had opened up in the heart of the mountain, plasma pistol already in hand, the source of the firing was the last thing she'd expected to see. Halberd in one hand, blazing with blue energy, a Terminator-armoured space marine was exchanging fire with Brand and her cronies. The cultists were using the stasis field as cover, circling around it and taking shots at the armoured Goliath. But the mixture of solid auto-pistol shot and lasfire did nothing more than reveal more of the silver armour beneath the conglomeration of lichen and filth. Sensing the presence of others in the chamber, the space marine aimed his pistol at the entrance but stopped short of firing it when he saw that Zula and the soldiers accompanying her were also attacking his targets. The air, filled with a heated discharge of las and plasma fire, punctuated by the staccato of bolt shells as the space marine dealt with one flank while the Catachans and Zula drove up the other, cutting off the cultist means of escape and pinning them down under a steady barrage. Over Zula's shoulder, a Catachan went down hard, a well-placed volley taking off the left side of his face. Zula avenged his death instantly by doing likewise to the cultist who had made the shot. A scream rang out from the other side of the chamber as a bolt shell evaporated the shoulder, arm, and most of the chest of a cultist. Using his corpse as a shield, another rattled off a string of las bolts, all of which missed the onrushing space marine. In response, the giant fired a single shot into the cultist whose life he had just ended, the round passing straight through him and exploding the torso of his comrade behind. That only left Brand. Out of options, she reached into her satchel and pulled out the vial of dark liquid given to her weeks ago by Corpulax. She held it above her head, using her other hand to alternately point her weapon at Zula and the space marine.
"Do you know what this is?"
Brand said.
"Hold your fire,"
Zula ordered to the Catachans behind her.
"It's a vial of Life Eater. The same thing that's used in virus bombs, not nearly enough to threaten the planet or even the base, but more than enough to kill everyone in this chamber." "Very good, Zula. I knew Dinald didn't just keep you around for your looks."
Cornered like a dog, Brand's tone was still one of superiority.
"Do you know what else it's good for?"
Zula said nothing.
"It's an airborne pathogen which makes it excellent at breaching stasis fields. Unfortunately, those Psyker slaves in there don't have their own air supply, which means the protective dome, while sufficient to prevent solid objects from passing in and out, is porous enough to allow gas and liquids through."
She emphasised this point by spitting through the field, a wad of phlegm landing on the hem of an oblivious Psyker's robes. She shook her pistol at the space marine.
"Even he can't save you now."
"Be ready to move when I do."
The shock of psychic intrusion registered briefly on Zula's face, but if Brand noticed, she did not react. Though he wore no psychic hood of the Librarius, the Space Marine was a psyker.
"Do not let the vial hit the ground."
"Understood," she replied in the manner her former master had taught her. Impossibly quickly, more so because of his armoured bulk, the Space Marine slashed down with his halberd, a blur of sapphire energy crackling through the stale air of the cavern. It made contact with Brand and sheared through bone, removing her forearm at the elbow. Moving not nearly as quickly as the Genhanced warrior, but still fast by human standards, Zula dived forwards and grasped the wrist of the severed arm, stopping the vial from smashing scant centimetres from the hard floor. She breathed out in audible relief. Lying next to her on the dais, Brand screamed and clutched at her cauterized stump. Strangely, her screams soon gave way to choked laughter.
"It's too late,"
she rasped through gritted teeth.
"It was on a timer."
Looking in horror at the limb she still clasped in her own hand, Zula heard the hiss of a valve releasing as the liquid within the vial began to seep out and expand. She dropped the arm, container and all, to the ground and scrambled away from it. As the vial shattered, a tiny droplet splashed her on the back of her hand.
"Move! Now!"
the Space Marine said directly into her mind. When she didn't react, instead sitting there trying to wipe the noxious substance from her hand, the Space Marine picked her up and bundled her under his arm, sprinting towards the entrance. The black ooze spread and multiplied like liquid cancer, consuming all in its path. Bran's severed arm dissolved at its touch, as did the still-laughing traitor when the dark substance spread over her body and engulfed her. It seeped in through the stasis field and climbed over the husks of the psykers, rising over them before disappearing inside them through slowly opening and closing mouths. The Catachans did not need the same warning nor aid that Zula had, and were heading back towards the entrance under their own power. Chased all the way by the proliferating life-eater virus, one of them tripped and was instantly engulfed by the blackness, all traces of him drowned beneath it. The others continued running for their lives, but that too was futile. Not having the speed of the augmented Space Marine, the remaining Catachans could only look on helplessly as he disappeared through the crack, Zula under his arm, while they became the next victims of the creeping death.
"My arm,"
Zula said as the Space Marine set her down in the vestibule, confident that the virus was contained to the chamber.
It's spreading,"
she said, panic rising in her voice. The tiny splash that had landed on her hand had expanded across her fingers and up to her wrist in the short space of time it had taken for the Space Marine to outrun the Life Eater. Tendrils were slowly creeping up her forearm, and her digits were starting to dissolve.
"This is going to hurt."
The Space Marine's voice was dry, and he over-enunciated each syllable as if he was speaking High Gothic for the first time.
"What? What's going to hurt?"
She was only half concentrating on his words, sickeningly fascinated by the change her body was undergoing.
"This,"
the Space Marine said, slashing down with his force halberd at precisely the same spot where he had separated Brand's arm from the rest of her body. Zula cried out in pain and looked down at the stump, expecting to be greeted by a fountain of blood, but instead found the wound was smooth and cauterized. Her severed forearm and hand dissolved into nothingness at her feet.
"It was the only way,"
the Space Marine said, unapologetically. Zula stared a little longer at the space where the rest of her left arm used to be, experimentally flexing her shoulder and bicep. She closed her eyes and slowed her breathing, which had become irregular and sharp.
"At least it wasn't my shooting arm," she said eventually, wincing through the pain. "Good. I think you'll be needing that soon," said the Space Marine.
He helped her uneasily to her feet.
"Can you walk unaided?"
"Yes, The trauma should soon pass, and you took it off clean, so blood loss won't be an issue,
she replied before pausing.
Who are you, anyway? I wasn't aware of any chapter operating on Pythos. Where are the rest of you?
Zula had fought alongside several chapters of the Adeptus Astartes during her career, but was struck by how odd it was to find a space marine operating alone. The livery and markings of his armour were unfamiliar, but there was rumoured to be over 1,000 chapters scattered across the Imperium, and even as an agent of the Inquisition, she could barely name or identify 100 of them. The space marine did not answer, instead looking the junior inquisitor up and down.
My name is Zula, Zula de Gries, junior inquisitor of the Ordo Malleus, and agent of the Golden Throne.
Zula,
the space marine repeated uneasily.
It's Zula, T-Z-U-L-A. The T is silent.
She paused again, expectantly.
And you are?
I am.
He seemed to be considering his answer.
I am Epimetheus of the Grey Knights, sentinel of Pythos and keeper of the Seventh Seal.
A Grey Knight?
Zula asked, surprised.
A brotherhood is already here on Pythos. Thank the Emperor. I thought...
As far as I'm aware, I am the sole Grey Knight on this planet.
He halted, the crackling of his force halberd breaking the silence.
I do not sense the psychic spoor of any of my brethren on this world, just the presence of the archenemy. With the final seal broken... It is only a matter of time before the damnation cache bursts open. Come, Junior Inquisitor. We have work to do.
I don't understand. How can you be here on your own? And your armour? How did it get into such poor condition?
The time for answers will come later,
Epimetheus said, starting off along the stone corridor at pace.
For now... We have a world to save.
913959, M41, Hangar Level, Imperial Command Center, Olympax Mountains, Pythos.
What the hell happened here?
Strike bellowed to be heard above the sound of engines spooling down as he strode along the exit ramp of the Valkyrie. The floor of the hangar level was carpeted in fallen rocks and dust, and otherwise airworthy craft were dented and scratched, cockpit windows crazed and shattered. Men and women frantically dashed about, attempting to clear landing spaces for the Valkyries, hovering in a holding pattern at the hangar entrance.
There was an incident, Chief,
Thorne answered sheepishly, before explaining the events of recent hours.
And the girl? The traitor? She's still in the base?
Strike asked after hearing Thorne out. He knew that the Major would be giving himself a hard enough time about being duped by Brand. Admonishing him about it would serve no purpose now.
I think so, yes. The other Inquisitor, the loyal one I mean, Zula, she took a squad after her.
The Tremors? Was that the final seal, being broken?
I have no idea. If it was, we probably would have known about it by now, don't you think?
A commotion from the hangar bay opening drew both men's attention. Recently landed pilots and disembarked troops alike were staring and pointing into the distance towards Attica. Strike and the Major jogged over to see what was happening for themselves.
It's the Hive, Chief! It's on fire!
A pilot, still dressed in full flying gear, told him. Unnatural smoke billowed up into the sky and over the jungle canopies, vast plumes of blackness spiralling sharply in all directions, growing ever greater in volume.
Pass me a magnoculus, Thorne,
Strike asked. The Major lifted the cord attached to the eyeglasses over his head and passed them to Strike. The Colonel looked through them in the direction of the planetary capital. When he removed them a few moments later, the colour had drained from his face.
That's... Not smoke,
he said, fighting to keep the emotion from impinging on his voice.
It's demons.